Welcome back to another episode of Mike Club. I'm joined with Benji Block today, and we're going to be covering industry news, podcast news that is relevant for B2B marketers, highlighting a member of Mike Club, and going through some frequently asked questions from the community at large. Let's break open some news, and welcome to your first appearance on Mike Club, Benji.
Thanks, Dan. It's great to be here.
I love scrolling through the news. So much of it is just not relevant for B2B marketers, but here's three that I thought were worth talking about. Starting with the fact that Apple Podcasts Connect has new analytics. And I think I announced this last time that they were doing this, but I actually had a chance to log in for the first time, go into my own podcast and be shocked by how few followers I actually had. Podcastconnect.apple.com. Go check this out. If it was set up for you automatically, you need to go bug your host to get a login for this. Otherwise, if you set this up, then you know what the login is. It's probably connected to your Apple account. But Benji, you have not checked it out for B2B growth yet.
I haven't. I'm very intrigued, man.
Because B2B growth has been around a long time. Like, what have we been averaging for like downloads per episode?
I will pull it up while you tell me what exactly you saw, and then we can talk about what you think I'm going to see. Because this will be, I think it's awesome that they're choosing to do this. I've always had this issue because I listen to my podcast on Spotify, but I want there to be like a source of truth. And I think all of us as podcasters want that.
It's something that I know our customers ask, and I've been asked a lot, like, oh, how many subscribers do we have? Which we now call followers because subscribers in Apple now mean a paid subscriber. So if you follow a show, that's technically what we used to think of as subscriber. That used to be a mystery. You used to never know what that was. You could guess, like, how many downloads did you get in the first 48 hours? And you're like, well, that's probably the amount of subscribers. If I get 100 downloads in the first 24 hours, then that's probably like 100 people listening. Turns out it's not, because each download can be different and it can be different per device. So if they're downloading it on their desktop and then downloading it on their iPhone, it's going to be different. And then across apps, it could be different. And it doesn't even include what you got going on over on YouTube. So we don't know. Now, this gives us finally a little window into how many followers, committed people that actually hit the, I want to get this automatically downloaded every time. It even gives you active followers. I just thought that was amazing, because before we used to like beg for this kind of information.
What are they describing as an active follower, Dan? Just someone that's listening episode to episode, or what does that look like?
Sorry, let me rephrase that. It's actually engaged listener. So we have followers, listeners, engaged listeners, and plays, I think, are equivalent to the downloads. And I'm just reading off my report for the Attention podcast. And I have 20 followers, 228 plays. And this is over a, let's see, I think a 30 day period.
Yeah.
Last 30 days, I've had 228 plays, only 20 followers. So it's being downloaded different times across different devices. I think it even counts as a new download if you download, if you came and listened like a couple days later. An engaged listener, I believe, is someone who's actually listened, who's a follower but has actually listened to one of your more recent episodes. So if they're a follower but they haven't listened in a long time, then that number is always going to be smaller than your followers. Engaged listeners are going to be smaller.
Yeah. So through Sounder right now, if I'm just looking at what our previous period as far as listens was, we're looking at 25 to 27,000 over the last couple months. And then streams is at 210,000. So again, those numbers are going to be all sorts of different and way lower in just like just my when I get my Apple stats back. But that's the gauge, one of the gauges that we've been looking at consistently.
If you haven't checked that out, I highly recommend go to podcastsconnect.apple.com. And look at these numbers for your own podcast.
Yep.
Again, it doesn't account for Spotify, it doesn't account for all the other players, just Apple. But for most B2B podcasts, Apple is still the main game. Even though Spotify's taken the throne overall for podcasts, Apple, I've noticed for us and all our customers, is still the primary place B2B podcasts are consumed for some reason. So check that out, see what your ratio is, and start to track it. It's good to get a first snapshot, but then track it over time. It's another data point that you can use to guide your decisions. Second up in the news is iHeartMedia has just announced a podcast network for NFT characters. NFT characters.
This one's interesting, man.
You want to give us the preface on what an NFT even is, Benji, real quick, before we dive into like how this is relevant for podcasts?
Sure. Yeah. So NFTs, we all think of them in different ways. Non-fungible tokens, they represent right now in the culture, primarily art, right? And we're thinking about them as this way that specifically wealthy people like want this asset. They prove that they have ownership of this thing. And I think because it's been so tied to art, people have opinions from a distance and go, this isn't something I'm interested in. But we're seeing it, and this is a move towards that, right? With iHeart, it's coming into the mainstream. And it's also going to move into different arenas that aren't just art. So from a high level, this was like this micro little thing off in the distance that people are curious about. And now it's slowly creeping into our everyday and into podcasting as well.
I like to think about it as rights management. Right now, it's very much digital art, right? It's not physical art, though. Some people are doing a hybrid between physical art. But if you have a Monet painting, then you're the right. If you own it and you have the painting, like you have it in your house, then you're the owner of it. You could probably have a certificate even that says this thing is legit. Think of that same certificate for a digital piece of art, a JPEG essentially, that says, nope, Benji is the rightful owner of this JPEG. Somebody else might have a copy of it, but no, Benji's the owner of it. And it almost becomes this rights management thing that's managed through technology called blockchain. And now it's getting incorporated into iHeartMedia via podcast, because what a lot of people are doing are creating characters that are very popular and creating all kinds of interesting characters. And then there's like algorithms that can make characters from different characters. Like you can almost, I don't know, in a way, breed NFTs.
Yeah, and that's a good way of thinking about it.
Creates a whole different piece of work out of the two come together. Like they have like crypto kitties where you could bring two kitties together and then bam, they have a baby and now the new kitty's different, right? Mm-hmm. And you almost have genetics built into them. Like they're that sophisticated in the code and algorithms, and there's rights management where people can own them. Because there's all these characters going, iHeartMedia is not only investing in these characters and buying the rights to them, but now building backstories to them through podcasting in order to increase the value of these characters for monetary gain.
Yeah.
Interesting thing.
It's a weird play in this specifically, because I see NFTs as you had the early adopters who were the ones that, again, I was watching from a distance going, oh, they're doing something interesting over there. I'm not ready to jump in yet. And now I think we're past that a little bit. You're actually seeing like the price of NFTs drop quite a bit, which is usually what happens before it comes a little bit more mainstream and we start to realize all the other applications of something like this. So you're going to see it start to be used outside of just digital art. And that's where I get most excited for it. iHeart's play here to me is actually, I can't think of other characters that have worked like this. Usually you'd create an asset like a movie, or there's some sort of character backstory, and then
story
the brand
first,
that,
and then
yeah,
right.
Think of Disney. Like you go buy the lunchbox after you saw the movie. You don't have this NFT created and then you're thinking, oh, now we need to create a backstory for them and a show for them. And so I'm all for it because there's a lot of creativity here. I just wonder what effectiveness it'll have, because it seems a bit backwards to me.
And this still seems a bit removed for B2B podcasters, because this is very much a B2C play that iHeart's doing. So what does this mean for B2B podcasters? I'm bringing this up because there's always the people who get on things early. If you got on TikTok early and it was early for B2B, would have been like early fall of last for TikTok. And we are lucky enough to have a staff member with Sweetfish that got on early to TikTok. And now she's on the forefront of thinking of TikTok on B2B.
Shout out, Emily.
This is one of those things that's coming for B2B and it's playing out in B2C. So I'm just paying attention. When it becomes easier to create NFTs and build in more utility, I actually think this is going to be a big component of all communities. In fact, Mike Club, this very club, I'm considering, like, how do I bring NFTs into this so that people can track, I can almost manage the memberships through NFTs, and you can actually buy rights like a ticket into Mike Club and then use that, have unlock for different things. Now, the technology still it's there. It's even becoming more accessible, but not quite accessible enough for Sweetfish to be able to manage well. And it's probably not widespread enough that a lot of the people who would want to be members would even be able to access it or even be able to put a few like Ethereum into it to buy into something really small or resell it or whatever like that. So it's a little too early, but it's coming. Guys, it's coming. So I'm just bringing it up in the news because it's starting to cross into podcasting and it's very exciting for that reason. Coming up lastly in the news, Snippet.fm has just launched and it is a short form podcast minute, as in 20 minutes or less. This is exciting news because it's a common question we get is how long should a good podcast be? And I'm going to answer that question later in this podcast. But it's interesting to see a whole player essentially focus on just short podcasts. I know, Benji, you were excited about it.
I think it's interesting. I'm reading right from their website here. It says, Snippet is the world's first short podcast platform. Our mission is to deliver meaningful content and unique original show concepts in a concise and powerful package under 20 minutes an episode. Okay, so they're also not talking about like repurposing other shows and making them shorter, which we've seen even, I listen to my shows on Spotify, and on Spotify, they've done something like this where they're just taking the best bit or the most listened to bit of that show and they're feeding it to you. They're also not speeding up the dialogue, which they say that 26% of podcast listeners do that. I listen to mine at 1.2 to 1.5 typically. So it's interesting here to go, okay, we're going to build our entire network of shows. We're going to go, it seems highly produced, under 20. That's their niche. And to me, we'll talk about what our personal opinions are on length in a little bit, but this is a good play because you're picking exactly what to expect in a whole network of shows. And you're going to hit a lot of people who are saying around 20 minutes is what they can do. I like the idea. I do. I don't know if I would base an entire thing off of just time, but they still, you can do a lot with that. And you could give creators the confines of something and then they go make the best of it, right?
It's always good to have limits in some way.
Yep, guardrails.
Good artistic expression comes when you add limits in some kind of fashion, whether it's just 2D or just pencil. And you can, if you go crazy and add all and have no constraints, and the really like the art just doesn't, it's too complex and it becomes a mess, becomes chaos. So if you're already one that's already limiting your show to 20 minutes or less, then this is a great platform that you can now be found on. For me, I know my podcasts range from 5 minutes all the way up to 40, 50 minutes because that's the route that I take. And I try to bring limitations onto my show to bring more clarity and focus in different ways. But this is a great opportunity for anybody who use time as a way to differentiate their show. There's a whole platform now dedicated to it.
I do think time can vary, but I think you are so right on amateurs want the wide open spaces. And the more pro you get, the more you fall in love with the restriction. Like the longer you're in business, the more you realize the budget is something that allows us to be more creative, not less creative. Like you realize within a time constraint, if you've ever communicated on a stage before and they said you have a hard cutoff at 15 or at 30, the way you create content for that actually allows your brain to be more creative, not less. So I do find this really, it's an interesting play and I think it would be fun.
And it's true across mediums, across channels. Just like a pro videographer will destroy you with a 5-year-old iPhone than you could ever get with a red camera.
Right.
So that's just how it goes. Constraints. But let's get into highlighting the member of the week. And I wanted to talk about a podcast called Thought Leadership Leverage. It's a podcast that I've listened to many times, especially when I was diving into the topic of thought leadership. Let me highlight a few things that I really love about this podcast. I know one of the hosts, Bill Sherman, a friend of mine, and what I like about it is it's so focused. It's so niched on just one category of marketing. And he uses this podcast, one, to explore new topics with the topic of thought leadership, exposing, it's like thought leadership about thought leadership, so that works out. But he's also using it to build relationships with guests, people that are experts in thought leadership or heads of thought leadership in their company, and other people that he could do business with across different businesses. So what I like about this is it's very rare that you can actually like have a show, now semantics, it's thought leadership on thought leadership, have a show that's very specific about the topic you're an expert in and use it to build strategic relationships with so many different companies. Usually it's one or the other. You use it to drive your methods and ideas about something, or you use it to build relationships. Doing both can be really difficult, but he pulls it off well with his podcast. So you can go over to thoughtleadershipleverage.com/thought-leadership-podcast and take a look to see what I'm talking about. But it was worth pointing out. But moving on to questions and getting to the one that we mentioned briefly as we were talking about snippet was, how long should a podcast be? Super common question. There are different theories about this. And Benji, I'll let you lead with what your current thinking is on this. Because I know there's a general idea around Sweetfish, but not everybody at Sweetfish agrees on this one.
Yeah, I don't think we should agree on it. I will give my opinion is dependent on the category you're in. So if you're trying to teach something in a podcast form, I am a huge proponent of just trying to teach like one thing per episode, which means I think you can communicate that definitely, I would say, in 30 minutes or less. For that type of informative, educational content, even if it's an interview, I think around 30, conversation starts to wane. Your questions aren't focused enough if you're going much over. But when it comes to time in general for podcasts, when I'm listening to an entertaining show, Bill Simmons is a sports podcaster that I listen to all the time. He's going for like 2 hours, and I don't care how long the episode is because it's on in the background, but he's having engaging conversations, and usually he doesn't talk to anyone for longer than 45, and then they'll do a little ad spot and on to a different person that he's talking to. You know why you are at the length you're at. It's going to inform everything else. If I wasn't creating content for B2B marketers, I might have a different length than around 30 minutes. So to me, it's dependent on the category you're in. And then also, you can tell in a conversation, just imagine outside of podcasting, Dan and I are at lunch. You can tell when the conversation's starting to wane and you're forcing it. Like, you don't want to hit that point in a show where other people are listening. You're not at lunch. It's not just two people. This is something, this is content that you are creating. So that's the key indicator for me, is you can tell when someone's engagement is starting to be lost. Dan, what are your thoughts here?
I have a few different viewpoints on it, or a few different rules that I've hung to. One that I learned from James Carberry is that it can be as long as it's good. Right?
Yep.
Like you were saying, don't stretch it on. If a guest only has 10 minutes of content, wind that sucker down. Even if your other shows are 30 minutes, like, we're done at 10 minutes. That's all they have to say. It's good.
Okay, wait. I got to interrupt you there.
I don't take the constraint. I'll have solo episodes for 5 and some interviews that go as long as 50 or 60 minutes because they were good.
Okay, but you were saying on the short ones, this is why I wanted to interrupt you, because you're saying on the short ones, if they only have 10 minutes of content, do 10 minutes of content. For all of us as hosts, we're going, okay, that's one thing to say that. It's another thing to be like 10 minutes in and we're executing the outro. Like, what does that look like to to go that short? Because to me, unless you really preface it and say, hey, if we get into it and we give away 10 minutes, they're going to look at your shows and they're going to go, oh, typically it's 30 minutes. So they're going to be trying to probably fill that, or they're expecting that. And I've had a couple interviews where I'm like, this could end short. Like, there's not a lot to be said here, but I'm guilty of stretching it out because I'm like, the other episodes are this length. So how do you think about it or do a shorter show?
One, most guests ask how long the show should be. Yes. I'd say about half of the guests I've done ask. Yes. And then I always tell them, oh, we don't have a set length. It could be as short as 10 minutes or as long as 60. We can take the full time we've blocked off today.
Yep. I like
that way. They're like, okay, cool. And then to finish it, I drop clues. You can do that as a host. Be like, man, this has been so good to learn all of this. To ask one last question. Then you ask the last question and then freaking move on. Then you wind it down after their answer. So that's what I usually cue it up with. For my last question, you thank them, ask the last question, and then you close. So that's how I do it. There's a few other things to consider. You can differentiate a show by length. Some people do it remarkably well. Like, one of my favorites is Hardcore History, Dan Carlin, not a B2B podcast, but freaking 3 to 6 hour long episodes.
Amazing.
And they're fantastic. But at that point, it's like an audiobook, and he only releases two or three of those a year, maybe. But Tim Ferriss, he's hour and a half, 2 hours, some of his episodes.
Pete Holmes, he's really at good. 3 hours. Yep.
Yeah. So there's, and those are exceptions. Most podcasts run between 20 and 50 minutes, or 30 and 50 minutes is normal. I think 44 minutes is the official most average time for a podcast. And again, channels have norms. So to go beyond that means you have to be really good. I also think that there's a skill set in how long you can go. If you're a really good host, you can generally get better content out longer, especially if you did no pre-interview, no research, and you just want to do like Joe Rogan style and explore live in the, so you don't know what you're getting into, but you have some questions prepared ahead of time. You just dive in and then just keep asking, oh, tell me more. Oh, tell me more. And let that episode go long in order to pull out the few nuggets for the YouTube clips. That's a way to go. But you have to be a better host to do that. If you want it to be really succinct, like a great 15-minute episode, it takes more work up front, right? So where do you want the work to go? If you want to have a really solid episode, that means you need to do more research. If you want to have a fantastic interview done so it can fit on snippet.fm, then you have to do the Jay Akunzo thing and have the interview and spend more time editing or do more time up front tailoring your questions. But the work's going to be spent somewhere outside of that interview, either in post-production or pre-production or post-production, so that you can tighten it up to that right amount of length. So lots of different ways to go about it. But I like that there's options. It's nice.
I do. There's options. It's interesting as a communicator, because if you're the only one talking, right? If it's just a monologue style, you can, if you have a time constraint of, let's say, 10 to 15 minutes, you have to be an excellent communicator to get across what you want to get across in a shorter period of time. So you're thinking about every word. When you're interviewing someone, what's complicated about it is, one, in B2B, I don't think people want a 2-hour Joe Rogan style interview. But what's helpful in that is if you don't know a lot about the person and you just keep throwing out questions, eventually they're going to say something good. So you have more opportunity for them to hit that gold. In a short time constraint, if I have 3 or 4 questions that I think are gold, but they don't deliver as a guest, then that episode is not great content. So it's this weird mix where I would love a short episode that's just hits the right thing, but I almost wonder if it takes recording a longer episode and then just doing what you said and trimming only the gold out of it. And that's, I think, in B2B podcasting is a good play, honestly.
Yep. But the time's got to come somewhere, and it's going to come in either pre-production or post-production, most likely a little bit of both, in order to get a really solid episode down to 20 minutes. And then it costs more to do it, but it can be worth it because it's more value in less time. And we all appreciate that. And to wrap up with the last question, this is a not less common question, but I still get it pretty often, is how do you get featured in Apple Podcast? Before, I did not have a good answer. Finally, Apple freaking published the answer. I was like, oh,
5 years too late.
Before it was like, you pretty much have to have a massive marketing budget and get thousands and tens of thousands of downloads. Now Apple has published the answer. So I always have an answer to this question. Now they actually have an official form you can submit with your podcast plan and everything that you're launching with your podcast. But a few things that I will say is that you generally do have to have a marketing plan. They want to see what's your marketing, what's your PR plan. Do you have owned audience? You got to put some dollars behind this. Not only does it have to be a really cool concept, slick cover art, really great title, like it also, like a lot of things have to be done well, and it has to have a lot of money behind it so that it's worth promoting, because you're going to put a lot of effort in if they're going to put some effort in too. It also has to be timely based on the market.
Oh, something going on in Ukraine and Russia.
So if it's just in the news and you do a political podcast that's on current events, mm-hmm, and some of their first seasons on Russia, that's really timely. So all those factors considered, but I almost want to preface it with, think about it as like hitting like the New York Times best-selling book list. Because that's how you have to think about it. Like, you're going to put in a lot of effort, but everything, the timing could be wrong and you had no way to control it. So it's almost like you can work for it. You could do all the work, but it's still like a shot that you just have to take because you only get one launch.
When you're looking up how to do this, don't trust anything that was posted like over a year ago, because now we have some sort of source of truth from Apple. And I feel like before, It was, one, if you're reading content that's 5 or 6 years old, it was so easy back then to get featured because they were just looking for it. I had a friend who didn't even try and got featured. So those days are long gone. Now you can actually go through, they have tips, and you can get you could submit this form just for an episode. So you don't even have to have a new show. It could just be a specific episode, like using the Ukraine-Russia example. If you did an episode on how that whole situation is affecting business or something, you could actually go in and request this just for an episode that you think is timely and want to have it featured. But you need to have, again, eye-catching art. Dan, you talked about that. Optimizing your episode title is something they're talking about. Timing, right? Which is the one we just hit on. So there's a lot there. And then they just have literally an Airtable set up that you can go in and put all your info in and submit that. So to me, it's helpful to just know what it takes. And then if you're thinking about your content calendar, let's say for a whole year, maybe there's a couple times where you're like, these are specific things I would submit for, instead of just only thinking about it at launch. Or I don't know that I've even fully thought about this in a long time because they didn't have anything around it. So I was like, it's just not worth thinking about.
So that's all we have for you today at Mike Club. Thanks for joining us. If you have questions, go to joinmikeclub.com. There is a little icon that's always floating in the bottom right-hand corner. Would love to get your questions. You could submit a little voicemail, and we will feature it on the show and answer your question here in next week's episode. So again, see you next week.
Bye, everybody.